From Washington, D.C., I'm Suzette Grelot, the Dean of the University of Oklahoma's College of International Studies. Welcome to Worldviews. Anthropologist Noah Terrio contributes to the blog Inhabiting the Anthropocene, which examines how humans have influenced climate and the environment.
One of the virtues of the Anthropocene concept is that it forces us to recognize these connections between the ways that humans organize their society and the broader effects on the planet.
We'll discuss this proposed geological epic right after my conversation with Rebecca Cruz. She joins me from Geilenkirchen, Germany. The country recently saw 4 violent attacks in less than a week.
They're not all terrorist related, but because these keep happening one on top of the other, that seems to be the conclusion that people automatically jump to.
That's all coming up, but first, this hour's news. This is Worldviews. I'm Suzette Grelot. Rebecca Cruz, you're in Germany. I'm in Washington, D.C. We're connecting from a distance again. So you're in a country that has experienced some unfortunate violent events just a couple of weeks ago. You know, some are, I guess, terrorism related, but others not. But they seem to always note one's heritage. There was an Afghan refugee that stabbed and axed 4 passengers on a train, a German teenager actually of Iranian descent that went on a killing spree in Munich, killing 9 people and injuring 30. A Syrian refugee that hacked to death a pregnant woman, and another Syrian refugee who tried to enter a concert with a backpack, and when he was not allowed to enter, he blew himself up and injured 15. So, I mean, this is kind of unusual for Germany to experience these sorts of events. What's the environment there like, and how are the Germans reacting and handling these types of security issues?
Well, it's a little bit tense, and as you mentioned, those 4 incidents this past week or so. On top of that, obviously, the situation in Nice, and then this week there was the murder in France of a priest. So things are feeling very, very close to the people here. And as you mentioned, they're not all terrorist-related, but because these keep happening one on top of the other, that seems to be the conclusion that people automatically jump to, and of course the media helps push that along. The connection, at least, that they do have is heritage, perhaps not the Munich situation, but the Syrian refugees, of course. And that really seems to be what's on everyone's mind, is the refugee situation. Germany obviously has taken in a large number of refugees. By last counts, about 2 million in the last 2 years. And reports were that in 2015, that increase was 49%. And for the first time, these immigrants are coming not from other places in Europe, the first time really in large numbers. So that's really what people are concerned about. They're automatically jumping to terrorism. But really, it's old fears of the refugees that are coming in that's the concern. Angela Merkel, a chancellor here, has faced a lot of criticism. She's actually has been on vacation, so she hadn't spoken much about what was going on. And then here in the last couple of days has come out and said how devastating this is, but she's not going to change the refugee policy, at least right now. So that's what's going on here. Feelings kind of tense. I mean, people are continuing to go around their everyday business, as you would expect, but there is a little bit more tension in the air. And on top of that, they just came out news here that there was a skirmish at the Frankfurt airport last weekend as well. A British man got in a fight with 4 police officers and really had nothing to do with terrorism or anything, but that automatically got on social media as also being a terrorist event. So just heightened awareness and a lot of conclusions that people are jumping to.
Well, obviously, I can imagine that there must be tension, and I would imagine there's more visible security around, particularly at airports and high target locations. But it seems to me that, you know, from what I've been reading a little bit about it, is that Germans, of course, just have this history of just being really introspective. And what kind of laws and policies do we need to enact to, you know, manage these sorts of crises? They don't necessarily go, you know, off the deep end about it and start declaring that, you know, we have to kick all the refugees out. The Economist actually referred to German response to these sorts of things as what they call heroic calmness, that they just are like naturally calm people and introspective people. Is that your experience there? I know you've spent a lot of time in Germany. You're there teaching a class right now, but you've spent a lot of time there in the past. And so is this your sense of how the Germans are handling these sorts of things?
Well, I suppose. I mean, I think that's a generalization. Within the Bundestag, the governing body here, there has been some dissent. As I mentioned, Angela Merkel is facing some additional criticism for continuing on the road towards her refugee policy, and particularly people in Bavaria, where a number of these attacks are taking place, the south state in the south. There's a lot more calls for action. And of course, through Munich is where a lot of the refugees last summer were going through that we heard a lot about. But we also should remember, and it's somewhat, I don't know if ironic's the right word, but I'm here in Germany teaching a class on terrorism. So this feels oddly appropriate to be talking with my students about what's going on. But we've been looking at statistics from the 1970s, 80s, and 90s. And unfortunately, Germany is not new to this sort of situation. They faced a number of terrorist attacks throughout the last couple of decades. So they do have some experience here in this regard. Beyond that, there have been some discussions about new laws. And one of the ones that's on the table is that Germany has very tight privacy laws, and so their police and intelligence are somewhat constricted. They can't listen in on conversations, and so there is some discussion about trying to kind of liberalize those to an extent so that they can get a little bit more intelligence and hopefully try to prevent some of this stuff. Now, that's very controversial, given Germany's history in particular, but that has been something that's been thrown out there.
All right. Well, Rebecca, thanks so much for joining us again from a distance from Germany. Enjoy the rest of your time, and I'll see you back in Norman soon.
All right. Thank you so much.
If you have any thoughts about this discussion or questions for Rebecca or me, let us know online at kgou.org. Next, I'll talk with University of Oklahoma anthropologist Noah Terrio about the concept of the Anthropocene. It's the idea that humans have affected the environment enough to leave a specific geological signature millions of years from now. I'm Suzette Grelot, and this is Worldviews. This is Worldviews. I'm Suzette Grelot. Today I'm joined by Noah Terrio. He's a cultural anthropologist at the University of Oklahoma and studies the politics of environmental regulations and minority groups' relationship with the state. He also contributes to the blog Inhabiting the Anthropocene, which focuses on the long-term effects humans have had on climate, geology, and the environment. Noah Terrio, welcome to Worldviews.
Thank you.
So, Noah, with your background as an anthropologist and an environmentalist, somebody who studies environment in certain parts of the world, human interaction with the environment, you've become interested in or involved in a scholarship on the what's called the Anthropocene, this proposed new epoch in the history of the planet that focuses on human interaction with the environment. Can you tell us a little bit about what that means? And it's a proposed epic. It hasn't, I guess, been accepted yet by the Geological Society, or who gets to accept these sorts of things. But, you know, what is all that all about?
The Anthropocene is a proposed new geologic epic that is being intensively studied by a group known as the Anthropocene Working Group. That's an interdisciplinary team that was set up by the International Commission on Stratigraphy. And it's up to them to decide whether to officially accept this as a new official geologic epic in, as you said, the history of the planet. But meanwhile, the term has really become popularized and has become something that scholars, activists, and others across the social sciences, environmental studies, humanities are using as a way of talking about the fact that humans have really become a geophysical force on the planetary scale that are having impacts on all aspects of the Earth system, from local ecosystems to the atmosphere and the climate itself. And so the question from a geological point of view is whether to declare a new geologic epoch. But regardless of that, I think part of the reason why geologists and others have started using this term is to really try to draw attention to the fact that humans are having, for a single species, a pretty much unprecedented effect on their entire biosphere, such that it could possibly be recorded permanently in the geological record, so that if, you know, say a extraterrestrial species came and studied our planet sometime in the distant future, they would be able to tell there was some big change right around what we would consider to be, you know, the geological present, because they're still debating whether to put the, you know, shift, if they want to put it anywhere, at the start of the Industrial Revolution, or maybe in the 1950s, or even perhaps the advent of agriculture. All of these big events in human history that in geologic time have been very recent but had very dramatic effects on the planet.
Well, I think pointing out the extraterrestrials or whoever that might come study us someday, or I was thinking along the lines, if humans were to become extinct someday, like, you know, species before us, that somebody or something that comes after us would be studying these sorts of things. But your mentioning of the timing, I think, is what's really interesting, because from what I can gather, I mean, some even suggest that you should go back and start this epical period really at the kind of the age of human history, that humans from the beginning. But is this really the case? I mean, because humans as a species, it seems to me, as you've just pointed out, with Industrial Revolution, with the development of technology, maybe with, you know, the advent of agriculture and a true impact on the planet in that respect, at least intervention, right? I mean, it seems to me like it's kind of an intervention. It's not, you're not, you know, just living off the planet of like kind of what grows naturally, but you're actually intervening and growing things on purpose, you know. And so it seems to me like it's difficult to determine when it is that humans had that initial impact, I guess, on the planet.
Yes. And, I tread with some trepidation on the geology of all of this in terms of what standard it would take to declare a new epoch in terms of what sorts of changes in the Earth system would be permanently recorded in the stratigraphic record. But I think it's absolutely true that human societies have been having profound impacts on their environments for as long as humans have existed on the planet. You know, one of the things that you see when you look at the paleoarchaeological record of sort of early human societies as they migrated out of Africa, is that as they move throughout the world, they have very profound impacts, particularly on large mammal species that they hunted. And that, of course, has, you know, cascading effects across an ecosystem. Even hunter-gatherer societies then have profound impacts on their environment. The question, I think, is whether there's some kind of qualitative and quantitative difference between those types of impacts and the types of impacts that come along with industrialization, the use of fossil fuels, just the really profound effects that has on things like the nitrogen cycle, the fact that humans are probably bringing about a sixth mass extinction event currently, which, as far as I know, a single species has never done before in the history of the planet. So, I think regardless of whether the geologists decide to make this division, it's worth thinking about these profound effects that we're having today that aren't necessarily an inevitable result of being human, but rather a result of the way in which we organize our economy and our society in particular ways.
Well, just to be clear, though, okay, so previous epochs, previous eras, I'm just curious, have largely been focused on geology and the geological, as we've been talking about, you know, the planet itself. Physically, can we suggest that this epoch, the human planet interaction, includes more atmosphere as well? Because, you know, obviously we're emitting a lot of things into the atmosphere now. Or has it always been the case that we've taken into consideration not just the geological formations and the physical geography and planet itself, but the atmospheric implications? Because that seems to be relatively new in terms of human impact on what's going on in the atmosphere with the emission of gases and that sort of thing.
I think so. I mean, I think the fact that humans are impacting the climate in such a profound way today may be new and is definitely part of what has led people to think about, you know, changing to a new geological epoch. On the other hand, though, I think that, you know, the use of fire by humans, both intentionally and unintentionally, goes back a very long time, and that can certainly have atmospheric effects, even if maybe not in the same to the same degree that the effects that fossil fuel use has had. So the use of fire by Native American populations is a very ancient practice. And I've, you know, heard Charles Mann describe the Great Plains as one massive buffalo farm, and that was largely maintained through the use of fire. And that certainly would have atmospheric effects at various scales.
I'm talking with Noah Terrio about the Anthropocene, the idea that humans have affected the environment enough to mark a new geological era. I'm Suzette Grelot, and this is Worldviews. You're listening to Worldviews. I'm Suzette Grelot, the Dean of the College of International Studies at the University of Oklahoma. This half hour, I've been talking with my colleague Noah Terrio. He's a sociocultural anthropologist at OU, and we've been talking about the impact humans have had on climate and the environment. When we left off, he said it's still not clear whether or not geologists should put the start at the Anthropocene in the industrial age, or when humans first discovered fire and developed agriculture.
So fires that we see today, of course, and I think you have some examples of some fires, particularly resource-related fires, but there's something different about or the same about what we experience today. I mean, fires are in the news a lot, right? Massive wildfires, fires that are out of control that can't be managed, but some are not necessarily man-made or human-made. Some are just naturally emerge, and I would imagine that's been going on forever and ever.
Certainly. I mean, lightning can cause fires. Fires can emerge in different kinds of ecosystems for different reasons, and I think they have play an important role in ecosystems, whether they're being used by humans intentionally to prevent the spread of forests and maintain grasslands, or whether they are part of an ecosystem's way of sort of replenishing the forest and preventing, you know, the buildup of a lot of old dead trees in the forest. But I think, you know, for example, this huge fire we're seeing up in Alberta in Canada near the oil sands, where they had to evacuate almost 90,000 people from a city up there. So they don't know yet what caused that particular fire, but even if it was caused by lightning, a putatively natural cause, it links to the concept of the Anthropocene and the global effects of humanity on the planet, because it's occurring in the context of an unprecedentedly warm winter and a broader warming trend that is leading to the winters not being as cool as they used to be, and fire conditions in the spring and summer being much more sort of severe, or the risk of fire being much higher. So, you know, you can't attribute any single fire, any single typhoon, any single event like that to human-caused climate change per se, but you can observe these trends. And I think one of the virtues of the Anthropocene concept is that it forces us to recognize these connections between the ways that humans organize their society and broader effects on the planet. There are, of course, trade-offs and downsides to a concept like the Anthropocene, which we can talk about if you
want. Yeah, no, I'd like to get to a discussion about the pros and the cons, I guess, of human interaction with the environment. Because, I mean, let's be clear. It seems to me that a lot of the commentary publicly discussed, the debate, is really about the negative effect that humans have on their environment. Humans win, planet loses, kind of, you know, situation. You know, you don't really hear about the benefits of that relationship so much as you hear about the costs of the relationship. I mean, is it truly the case that humans are just, you know, horrible for the planet? And so that interaction is really one-sided, humans taking from the planet and the planet, you know, struggling to revive or regenerate. And I mean, I've heard people argue before that, look, you know, humans are our species and, you know, they the planet's been around for a long, long, long time. And humans aren't going to destroy the planet. They're using the planet. They need to replenish and replace and you know, reuse and all of those things, conserve. But the planet is a resilient thing. And so is that the case? Or, you know, are there benefits for the way in which humans interact with the environment? Or is it just strictly a one-sided relationship?
Well, I'm glad you asked this question, because I had said that one of the virtues of the Anthropocene is that it forces us to think about these global connections and maybe even promotes some accountability around humans' planetary effects. On the other hand, though, I think one of the downsides to this concept is that it does sort of obscure the variability that exists in human relationships with the environment, and it sort of implies that that perhaps this is our destiny somehow as a species, is to either wreck or at least dominate our planet in this way. And I think that that overlooks not only a huge amount of diversity in human history, but a huge amount of diversity in the present, both in terms of human adaptations to their environments and the effects that those have on the environment, positive and negative, and also in terms of responsibility for the things, the conditions that lead us to want to propose a new geologic epoch like the Anthropocene. So I think, you know, whether a particular environmental effect is positive or negative always is going to depend on whatever value system you're using to evaluate it. But I think if we're thinking about adaptations that might be sustainable in the sense of not leading to sort of long-term degradation of an ecosystem. Humans are perfectly capable of that, and we've seen that, you know, including where I do research in the Philippines with people who practice Sweden agriculture, which over the long term can be a sustainable adaptation to a tropical forest ecosystem, perhaps even can increase the biodiversity of an ecosystem by leading to a variability in the maturity level of the forest to create niches for different species that wouldn't be able to live in a more homogeneous forest. But I think, you know, humans are always creating niches for both themselves and other species. It just kind of depends on what those other species are and whether we're leaving room for a wide enough array of other species in our environments that we can have flourishing ecosystems. And I think part of what we're seeing today, and part of what is leading to this proposal of the Anthropocene as a new epoch, is the sense that humans are becoming very dominant in the ecosystems in which they exist, to the extent that they may be not leaving enough space for other species to flourish, and in the long run that could even undermine our own ability to continue existing in the way that we exist now.
So needing to find a mutually beneficial relationship. I mean, I think the word that you said and that I want to pick up on and we can end here, because I mean we're talking about whether there should be an epic or not, and obviously there's a lot of research and consideration going into that. But at the end of the day, there's got to be some sort of proposal of in terms of how should we behave. And your word sustainable, right? That there should be some consideration among the human population to maintain a sustainable relationship between our environment. Is that basically the kind of the bottom line of this whole discussion?
I think so. I think part of what we need to think about as a society, perhaps even as a species to the extent that that's possible, is how can we enable a good life for ourselves without undermining the ability of other species, or maybe perhaps thinking more holistically of whole ecosystems, to persist and to reproduce themselves and not be destroyed by our own pursuit of a good life. That's obviously a very difficult and fraught question that I don't think there's any simple answer to. And I think sustainability really needs to be defined specifically to be a workable concept to start with. But I do think that pursuing sustainable ways of pursuing a good life is the route that we need to take.
All right. Well, I'm sure we could go on and on about that as well. There are, of course, many perspectives on this relationship between humans and the environment. But Noah, thank you so much for being here and sharing your thoughts with us today.
Thank you very much.
I've been listening to my conversation with Noah Terrio. He's an anthropologist at the University of Oklahoma, and you can find a link to the blog about the Anthropocene that he contributes to on our website, kgou.org. KGOU produces Worldviews with the support of OU's College of International Studies. Our digital editor is Brian Hardzinski, and our researcher is Miranda Wilson. For Rebecca Cruz, I'm Suzette Corlott.